Okay, you're tuned to WHBK 88.5 FM in Chicago. You are listening to the Sitting in the Park show. Right now I have on the phone special guest Lee Holloway, who was in a couple groups. Lee, can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Okay, great. So right now we're going to be talking about the groups that Lee was in that recorded in the 70s and 80s and playing some of his group's records. So, first of all, you're originally from Gary, Indiana, right?
Yeah, born and raised.
Okay. And so the first group that you recorded with was called the Crash Band, is that right?
That's right.
So first, I'd like to get some history of what you were doing before that. So that Crash Band record came out in, like, 75. And but before that, you were you involved with music at all?
Yeah. I was actually before Crash. There was a band I was with called Peace.
Okay.
And you know, a local band here in the area, and like all bands, we was playing around, talent shows and stuff like that. So they're a real nice band. As a matter of fact, the organ player, I knew his family. I mean, we all stayed down the street from each other, and believe it or not, we're now playing at the same church. His father's pastor, and he's playing organ. So
that's cool.
Our manager back there attends the church too, so we kind of came back around a little bit.
So when did you have that group Peace? Like in what years?
That was that started in 69.
Okay.
And yeah, 69.
And that was in Gary, Indiana. Is that right?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
So was that when you were you out of high school by that time when you formed Peace?
I was in my senior year.
So what high school did you go to?
Oh, that was Gary Emerson.
And what was the music? Can you tell the listeners a little bit about what the music scene was like back in 69 in Gary?
Oh,
like
yeah,
obviously everyone knows the Jackson 5, but
right, old school, Motown, straight up R&B, I mean the 70s, 60s, late 60s, 70s music, man, it was all good music. It was just all good stuff. So we were basically a copy band, and we were doing stuff, Motown, Stevie Wonder, all that stuff, and actually we were doing some rock tunes as well. Because when I first started playing, I was into Santana, groups like Santana, Grand Funk Railroad, our man, Three Dog Night, all those guys, Doobie Brothers.
So what instrument were you playing?
Guitar.
Okay.
Guitar. Yeah. I played it in school. I started playing trumpet and guitar at about the same time. And once I got out of school, I just kept up with the guitar.
Okay. And you formed that band, and that band Peace just did shows around Gary, Indiana. Is that right?
Sure did. Toward the latter part of the time we were together, this is when Gary was really doing a lot of stuff back then. They had Memorial Auditorium.
Okay.
We won a couple of talent shows, 70 and actually 71. We won a couple of talent shows 2 years in a row down there. And it was nice, man. It was just, people enjoying music, having fun, and, it was all good.
So I got to ask, since you were from Gary, did you have any interaction with the Jackson 5 back in the day?
Just very little. I remember them when they first.
I think they went to Roosevelt,
they
right?
Were actually on a talent show too.
Okay, so you were on a talent show with them.
Ah, no, I was on the talent show with them, but I saw them on one.
Okay, and when you played in the talent shows, did you guys play as a band, or did you back other people?
No, we played as a band. We were a self-contained band. We had vocalists and a couple of horns, two or three piece horns, and. A real self-contained band.
Okay, so then the first group you were in that actually recorded was called the Crash Band.
Correct.
Spelled with a K. So what's the story? When did you who formed the Crash Band? Like, how did the band come about?
Well, actually, there was a transition from Peace to another band before I even got to Crash. I was playing with a gentleman called Vernell Powell in a group called Vernell Powell and the Intruders.
Okay.
And, we used to do the Southside Chicago, I was legit with them for once I left Peace, I was with Vernell for, at least two or three years too before Crash. And, we used to do all the night spots, like the Lonnie Skyway Lounge, the Green Bunny, the Bonanza, Purr's House, and actually before Purr's House, it was called Colonial House. A lot of places, the Club Natural, the down on State Street, the Packing House, a lot of, I mean, it was like a lot of, every weekend we were playing somewhere.
Okay. And so you were in bands up to the time that Crash formed?
Yeah.
So then what's the story? How did Crash form?
A friend of mine, called me, his name was Wayne Tatum, and, asked me about playing in a band that him and another guy was putting together, Bobby Cousinard.
Okay.
And so they asked me to come through and, you know, check it out. I did, and, actually one of the guys that played horns with me, with Vernell Powell also came along, and that's how we started, that's how we formed Crash. The guys had called and asked me, I'd be interested. I said, let's check it out, and we went from there.
Okay, so I want to talk some more, but before we talk too much, I want to give the listeners some idea what we're talking about. So I'm going to play the Crash Band record, and then we'll come back and talk a little bit more.
Sounds good.
About the record. So this record came out in 1975, and this is a nice cut called So I Can Make This Change.
Oh, yeah.
So here it is.
Is there any love left between us? Is it really, really gone? Can there be truth in what you say? If so, how can I go?
Okay, cool. So you are tuned to WHBK 88.5 FM in Chicago. And if you're just tuning in, I am talking to Lee Holloway, member of the Crash Band and IND. That was just the Crash Band record called So I Can Make This Change. And just before I played the record, we were just talking about how the Crash Band formed. So Lee was talking about how a couple guys called him up and he auditioned, and basically the group just came together. Is that right?
Yeah, that was it, man. That was it. We just some guys. Then we pulled in another friend of mine, a keyboard player, and that I knew. Well, I didn't know it, but they called me in and I met him. And from then on, it was just like, man, it just went from there.
Can you tell us what the final lineup of the group is, the band is, that's playing on that record?
That was that tune, So I Can Make the Change, was a tune I wrote and arranged. We had a five-piece horn section and a five-piece rhythm section. The young lady singing was Evelyn Holder.
Okay.
She was our lead singer, and we had, bass guitar, keyboards, drums, the young lady, and then a five-piece horn section.
So do you remember everyone's names?
Oh, there was Cornell Monroe on trumpet. Eugene Gillis was on trumpet. Quincy Ford was on sax. George Lloyd was on sax. And, I can think of my guy that played the trombone. I know, we call him Nate. But I can't remember his last name. I can't remember the guy that they played the trombone, but we had a five-piece horn section then.
Okay. So one thing I do on my show a lot is I mainly interview vocal groups, and one thing that's nice about that record is you have real nice sort of backing harmony on the record. So was it just a band singing behind Evelyn Holder, is that right?
Right. We're a self-contained group. Myself, Cornell Monroe, who does, he has a good false. He was the one that he does false. You singing background, Robert Kuznar was singing background, and the keyboard player, he was singing background as well.
What was the keyboard player's name?
Oh, Dennis Willis.
Okay, so that record came out, and so how'd you get a record deal? It came out on a record label called Liberated Records.
Yeah.
What's the story?
That was something that we got through Bobby Kuznar, the sax player.
Okay.
He made some type of connection, I don't know how he got it, with Herb Temple. He was our assistant art director of Johnson's Publications downtown there.
Yeah, you know, he still works there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he heard the group, I guess, and decided to, he wanted to work with us. So he decided to, he wanted to hear some of our originals, and we put together some tunes. He heard the ones he liked and took us down to Paul Serrano's.
Okay. So.
That's where we recorded it.
So you just kind of met up with him, and he decided to record you. He became your manager, too, is that right?
Yes, he did. Yes, he did.
So, did the record get any play, like, in the Gary area at all, or anywhere?
It got really limited play. I guess, when you first time out the gate, you know, you really, you have to really put, from what I understand, being in the business for now, look back and see that you have to really put, money into promotions and to get the record out there and played, and it just didn't get the promotion that it should have gotten, because a lot of people heard the tune, and we play it out at different places, and they liked it, you know, but it just didn't get the promotion that it should have got.
So the Crash Band, did you guys do a lot of shows as the Crash Band?
Yeah, we did a lot of stuff locally as well as some stuff for college campuses, you know.
Okay.
We did some stuff there. We even did a couple of shows for now closed Chanute Air Force Base down in Rantoul.
Okay.
We used to do some things down there. So, yeah, we did, but basically a lot of local stuff, you know. And, you know, me have traveled a little, you know, lightly, like I said, to different colleges and different things. But, yeah, pretty much.
And so you were a self-contained band at the time. Would you say, like the type of thing you were going for was like an Earth, Wind, and Fire type of thing? Was that?
Yeah, it kind of had that flavor. I mean, because I myself, being a trumpet player, I like the Pat Horn section. And so, you know, back then, Earth, Wind, and Fire, and they still do, they had a very tight horn section. So I guess you could say kind of emulated them a little bit.
Okay. So after that record came out, you eventually cut another record under the name IND.
So, yes, we did.
So how long were you together under the name The Crash Band?
Crash disbanded in, I think, 76 maybe. 76, early 77.
So did you formed around 75, sometime around there?
Yeah. So we 74, 75. We formed, and then we decided to, as usual, groups have different issues, and so we decided to go ahead and, at one time, pursue some other things, individuals did.
Okay, and one thing I forgot to ask is, you were called the Crash Band with a K. Is there any meaning behind that name or any story, or just use the name you came up with pretty much?
That's the name we just came up with.
Okay.
You know, we decided Crash, but then we decided to, started with a K.
Okay. So then after the Crash Band disbanded around 76, 77, you were saying, and then you formed a group with some of the members called IND. Is that right? So, first of all, what IND, it stands for something, right? What does it stand for?
Yeah, the acronym was Into New Dimensions.
Okay.
Yeah, it's kind of like I say, we wanted to kind of take our sound into, like a new realm, trying a different thing, different things. And we were still, still in the 70s, and, Earth, Wind, and Fire was still kicking, so we still had that fat horn section, and wanted to kind of do some things based around that big horn section. Groups like Chicago, Blood, Sweat, and Tears, oh, man, a lot of groups back then had them real fat horn sections.
Okay.
I just like a fat horn section myself, personally.
And I know there were other, self-contained bands from Gary, too, like the World Column was from Gary, right?
Sure was, yeah. Those guys, too, yeah. And they, I knew, actually, a couple of the drummers from that group, we went to the same high school. They went to Emerson as well.
Okay. So,
and then, what's the gentleman's name that sung, Mr. Redding? He was,
I think his name was Bob Redding, is that?
Yeah, he was with them, yeah.
So,
there's a lot of good groups back then in the day, man.
So you formed this group, IND. What was the membership of IND? Like, was it similar to the Crash Band? Did you have a lot of common members?
Yeah, we still had Cornell, and we had Eugene. So basically all the members, with the exception of bass player, and we had another guitar player that we added. So, pretty much,
And Evelyn Holder had left the group, is that right?
Right. She did. Evelyn moved out of town. She moved to Atlanta.
So, IND is almost the same group as a Crash Band with just a couple different people.
Just about, yeah.
Okay, so, I'm going to play the record, and then we can talk a little bit more about how this record got recorded. This is a real nice record, and I really like the falsetto on this. So who's singing lead on this record?
Let me see. Which one is it?
I'm going to play I'm Not Ready.
Oh, yeah. That's Cornell Monroe singing the false, and the gentleman singing lead is Michael Mills. He wrote the tune. He's no longer with us. He passed away a few years back in an auto accident, and he's the one that's singing the lead for that song.
Okay, well, I'm going to play it now, and then we could talk some more. So this is IND with I'm Not Ready to Give Up My Love.
Thank you.
Okay, that was just IND with I'm Not Ready. And if you're just tuning in, I have on the phone right now Lee Holloway, member of IND and the Crash Band, a group from Gary, Indiana. So you're still there, aren't you?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, cool. So right before I played that record, we were just talking about how the group IND formed right after the Crash Band broke up and how it had almost all of the same members, just with a couple of replacements. So, and so who was singing lead on that record again?
His name was Michael Mills.
Okay.
And yeah, we were actually junior high and high school buddies.
Okay.
He played rhythm guitar in the group. And his brother actually ended up playing bass.
Okay. And I was confused when you said that a different guy was singing falsetto, because it sounds like the lead is like a falsetto on that song. That's why I was confused what you meant.
Well, the guy that's first singing, Michael Mills, and did a lot of the lead.
Okay.
But then Cornell came in and did on the chorus a lot and did the false.
Okay, and you're singing on the record too as on backup, is that right?
Background, yeah.
Okay, and,
yeah.
And a bunch of other the band members are singing in background too, right?
Yeah.
So you guys had pretty nice like harmony together on the records. Did you guys sing? Is it just from singing a lot at shows and stuff? Is that how you got?
I had to practice on it.
Okay.
I mean, a lot of the guys, had singing experience. I guess just being musically inclined, so we were able to kind of put it together pretty good,
Okay, so. One thing that's interesting about the record is that it came out actually on a Memphis label. And like a lot of record collectors who don't know anything about the group think it's a group from Memphis, even though you guys are from Gary. So
uh-huh.
Can you tell the story about how you got a record deal and what's the deal with the record label?
Yeah, that was, once again, I don't know how he did, but Bobby Cousinard managed to connect with a gentleman by the name of Gene Bolaise Miller.
Okay.
He was, back in the 70s, he was a pretty well-known person in the business down in Memphis.
Okay.
And he asked us to send him some demos, and we sent him a demo, a few tunes, and he liked what he heard. So we went down and did a single down there in the High Studios, Royal Studios, which is Al Green's studio.
So you
and Al Green's original producer Willie Mitchell, he engineered our session.
Yeah, that's interesting. So you went down to Memphis and recorded at High Studios.
Uh huh.
So
yeah, Mama Say Records was a company put together by three doctors.
Okay.
And Bolaise Miller was doing the promotions and stuff, A&R for him. So they had us come down. We went down to Memphis and had a real good time down there. Met up with. We had remember Rufus Thomas?
Yeah.
His son was playing keyboards on some of the sessions as well.
So did you?
We met Rufus Thomas too down there. His daughter Carla Thomas. We were down there. We played in a club called Hawaiian Isle.
Okay.
It was right down Elvis Presley Boulevard.
So it
was fun. It was nice.
Did you cut more than just the two songs when you were there? Because you talked about all the different sessions you did. Did you cut more material?
No, we just cut one song down there.
Well, there's two. There's the B side of the record too, right?
Right.
So did you cut both sides in Memphis?
Yeah, we cut both of them in there. Yeah.
Okay, and then you said the label was just owned by three doctors, and Bolaise Miller probably just is the guy that found those three guys. Is that right?
Yeah. I guess I don't know how they got together, but Mr. Miller just, he took a demo to them and they liked what they heard, so they had us come down.
Okay, and they pretty much just put together that label and just put out your record on that label. So do you remember if the record got any play anywhere, pretty much?
It may have got some down in Memphis, but again, it just didn't, like I said, it didn't get promoted like it should have. It didn't get out there.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that's the type of thing that happens when you're on sort of independent labels that just start up.
Yeah,
the guys, you know,
exactly.
They don't know how to promote the music, and it's a difficult industry to get into.
Not, maybe they don't know how, but they don't have the finances to get it out there.
Yeah,
I've learned that it takes takes money to promote. I mean, you got to get out there, and you got to really put that product out there where people can hear it, and if it doesn't get promoted, you know, okay, how good the product is, it'll sit on the shelf because of lack of promotion.
So so when you were at IND, did you tour too, or did you just play mostly in Gary and Chicago?
The general area, we were here in Gary, Chicago. We did the college thing. Actually, we opened up for, we went as far as Lincoln, Nebraska, to the University of Nebraska, and opened up for the Barcades.
Okay.
So that was pretty fun. Them guys were wild. But, you know, we did that. And so, I mean, we did some good things. You know, people were really, you know, hiring the band a lot. A lot of class reunions. We were doing a lot of that. Family reunions, wedding receptions. Like I said, some clubs. In 82 when the album came out, we actually, did, a special guest with Cameo.
Okay.
At the Holiday Star Theater.
That's cool. And were you telling me before it was like a New Year's show or something like that?
Well, that came afterwards.
Okay.
The guy, Mr. White's son, Bruce, liked the band so much he hired us that same year for the New Year's Eve show in the Grand Ballroom out there.
Okay. And so what's the story? So you just mentioned that you cut a record in a whole album, actually, I think in 1982, 81, 82.
Uh-huh.
So what's the deal? I think it came out on Erect Records.
Yeah.
So what's the story behind all that, the label and you getting a record deal with them?
Well, we found out there was a record company opening up out in Maryville.
Okay.
Yeah, the couple of guys... Jim Porter and I think the guy's other guy's name was Joel Sotoros.
Okay.
If I got that right, they started a record company. Actually, when they opened up out there, they had already been into it because they had some rock groups they had started working with, and I think we were probably maybe the sixth or seventh group that they picked up.
Okay.
And we sent him a demo tape out there. We took it out there to him. He listened to it and said, "Hey, I like what I hear. How about you guys coming in? Let's do an album."
Okay.
And we did.
So you cut an album, and there was one single released off the album called "Everybody Likes to Do It."
Yeah.
So did that song, and then the flip was called "Into New Dimensions." Did that record get any play, or did you have any play off of the album?
Actually, we did get some play off of that song, but more so off the album.
Okay.
Back then, it was down in the Midwest, down in St. Louis. I understand that there was a couple of radio stations had it on their playlist, and it reached to number one down there. They were doing some play on the West Coast.
So which song got play?
They were playing Side by Side.
Okay.
That was the one that they were playing. They liked that one on there. And I just happened to, one day was coming home, I think from work or something, and I came home and turned on the radio, and the station back then was called, V13 was called WBMX.
Yeah.
And I turned on the radio, just happened to turn it on, and all of a sudden I hear Side by Side come on. I said, "Oh man, they're playing the song." So, the guy, played the song, then gave it a nice little review when he got through with it. But, and that's when we had, who was that? Alonzo King, who used to work with Motown.
Okay.
He was the promotion guy for Erect Records.
Okay, so that was pretty much the record you had your most success with, is that right?
Yeah, I would say that was the most successful one.
Yeah, I don't actually have the LP. I would play that record if I could. So what's the story? The group, did you got a little bit bigger after that record came out, and then were you together for much longer after that?
After that came out, we stayed together till about 80, 83, about 84.
Okay.
84 is when, let me think about that. 84, 85, yeah. Yeah, about 84, 85, things started to, dissipate a little things. You know, with our group, you have some issues, and so we just kind of, things just kind of, you know, left out there.
So, since then, have you been involved with music, and have, do you know if other people from the group have been involved with music?
I'm not sure about the, I'm still involved. I play with a band now. I've been with this band. Well, let me see. We started about 10 years ago, a group called In the Pocket.
Okay.
And we've recently changed the name to Soul Syndicate. But we've been together now for like about 10 years for the most part. And so I'm still involved in music, working on a couple of CD projects my own. I just helped co-produce a CD for a gentleman by the name of Cliff Goldberg's gospel album.
Okay. He's a Gary artist, right?
Yeah, I'm still in the music. Music is a passion for me. It's just something. I mean, I truly love it.
Okay, well, and you're doing music on yourself too, is that right?
Yeah. I'm working on a contemporary jazz CD right now.
Okay, and you were telling me you were producing something on your wife too.
Yeah. We're doing she's doing a contemporary Christian CD that. We got all the tracks done. We're working on the vocals right now. So we're looking at also with a studio called Free Flight Studios in Hobart, Indiana. A gentleman by the name of Fred Norris. We're working with him at his studio. So it's coming along pretty good.
Okay, well, hopefully something will come of those projects.
Well, I'm hoping it too.
And hopefully some people will get to see your band play at some show, probably in Chicago, and you play in Indiana too. Is that right?
Oh, yeah. We've done a lot of, private affairs. We do corporate parties, and we were on the casino circuit for quite a while. We started at Harrah's when they were in Joliet and In the Pocket. And so we did that, and then after that, they opened up the 101 in East Chicago, and we played there for a year or so. That's when they had the stage that rise up out of the middle of the pavilion, the last one.
Yeah. So what's the deal with the casino circuit? Like, is there just a show that people go to see in the casino, or what's the deal with playing in a casino? How does it work?
Well, they usually set the bands up in the pavilion.
Okay.
So they give you constant entertainment, as you come in, and basically it's in the evenings when people coming in, so you take the band out a little somewhat, and then you go. Do your thing on the boat in the casino, then you still got the band out there keeping people entertained.
So you're like
we played it. Actually, we did Majestic Star Casino for 2 or 3 years because I used to work there. So we kind of did some things out there. New Year's Eve, about 2 or 3 years in a row, we played out there, and it was fun.
So usually when you're at the casino, you're playing on a stage, sort of in the background.
You're out there. They usually set you, like I said, they set you up in the pavilion area.
Okay.
That's where most of the bands are set up at. When we were in Joliet, the same thing was in the pavilion area. They had like a banquet room off to the side, which is where we were playing, but it was right still in the pavilion.
Okay.
So people would come in, they'd sit out, and watch the band and eat a little bit or something before they go to the boat, or maybe just come in just to check out the entertainment. But it's just that's what they... I guess the atmosphere that the casino tries to offer, constant entertainment.
Okay, well, it's definitely good that you've managed to stay involved with music this whole time. So I want to say, first of all, thanks so much for being on the phone and telling the story of your group.
Oh, no problem, man. I appreciate you calling, and really do. I mean, it's good that people still recognize, some of the music and earlier groups back in the day, even though those groups didn't go on to make it big, but they were still good groups. Just, sometimes, it happens that way for a reason.
I mean, it's definitely like a classic era of music that, you know, probably won't be replicated, the stuff that came out in the 60s and 70s.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
So, thanks again. Any last words for the listening audience?
if you run across the band called Soul Syndicate, check us out and be listening for a couple of projects that I'm working on. Just keep live music, keep it live.
Okay, cool. Well, thanks so much. And people, if they want, they can check out the interview later on the website, which is www.sittinginthepark.com. And thanks again.
Thanks, Bob. Thanks for having me.
Okay, cool. Well, bye.
Bye-bye.